I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
It is I, CM2, the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and you can't teach that. Here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. This is episode 70, and yes, I am back once again. Yeah, I didn't take 6 months to put out a new episode once again. And on this episode, we're not covering the Rumble. We're not even covering Starrcade or Uncensored or whatever it was that WCW put in January. Hell, we're not even guilty as charged of being in America, that is. No. See, this time out, we are going all the way to Japan as we cover the most recent of the New Year's Dome shows from New Japan Pro Wrestling. I am, of course, talking about last week's Wrestle Kingdom 11, right here on CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Now, like I said, I'm glad to be back, and this was a really good pay-per-view to start off with. Because in a new promo that I put out, which, by the way, you can find at www.an.132productions.com, which is here the Absolution Network. I make mention about covering both wrestling's past and present. And, you know, there's nothing more present right now than Wrestle Kingdom, which is really the first big pay-per-view in what is this new era, which I kind of want to talk about for a second because, we call it the reality era, which I think is what Triple H sort of called it at one point, but I think a really new term for it, or a better term, would be the digital or internet era, because we're definitely living in an era where we are no longer bound by cable or, cable subscriptions or by the television bunny ears or whatever. Again, over the years, over the decades, as TV has grown, so has our reach for what we can watch wrestling. From the 60s and 70s, where it was all local and there was local stations, into the mid 80s when cable came about and you could watch things like the Superstation, and you could watch WCW or NWA as the time that became WCW, or you could watch the WWF as it was in time in the Rock and Wrestling Connection, that which gave us the rise of Hulk Hogan. All of that because of cable, and which ultimately led to the Monday Night Wars between WCW and WWE. But as the internet has become more prevalent, and you see this with WWE being a lot more focused with the WWE Network. I know a lot of people complain. I mean, if you're a wrestling fan, you can't listen to anything wrestling related without somebody complaining about
how long Raw is. But I think we can definitely say that WWE is definitely more moment-focused and things like that. Like, they're more focused on general moments that make you feel things rather than sometimes congruent storylines. Not that they don't do congruent storylines, because they definitely do. All you have to do is watch SmackDown, which is the better show of the two. I would dare say SmackDown is even better right now than NXT, which I can't believe I'm saying. That being said, you know, again, it's this internet era, so we're not just bound by that. We're not bound by TNA on whatever channel it's on right now. I saw the new TNA logo and like, oh my, finally somebody bought it and took Dixie Carter. Things are looking up. Then I see the logo and they're back down. But you have Ring of Honor, which is on Access TV, New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV, or more importantly, you have this wonderful thing called the internet, where whether legally or not, you can access any wrestling you want, whether it be WWE Network, New Japan Pro World, free matches on YouTube. I mean, you can watch reality of wrestling, Booker T's promotion on YouTube. A lot of promotions are putting their stuff on YouTube. Chikara has their own site. PWG has their own site. You know, the internet has expanded our reach to watch wrestling to beyond just what our cable subscriptions give us. Or at least it will be that way until, you know, President-elect, soon-to-be President Trump and, you know, his Republican suck-asses completely close down the internet, you know, so that the cable company can screw us out of more money. But that's here or there. That's the Armageddon that will happen in about 2 weeks, a week. Let's enjoy the moment and stop looking down. So, obviously the internet has expanded our reach to what we can watch and what we can enjoy. So, moving beyond just WWE, WCW, ECW, though that will be still a primary focus, in particular when I go into the past. It's definitely hard around like November because you have to make the choice between, am I going to do Survivor Series or am I going to do World War III? And ECW has some stuff in November too. So, there is going to be a definite attempt to try to expand CMG wrestling reviews to other shows. It's going to depend on money and stuff, but it's also going to depend on my access. We'll see how things go into the future. But, you know, I've had the opportunity, thanks to a friend who allowed me to have a copy of Wrestle Kingdom 11, which is why I'm getting a chance to review it to you today. I thank that friend, and he knows who you are. Yes, you know who you are. You know who you are, friend. Yes, you. You on the tube. that was a really bad joke. I apologize. I could just hear Tito going, you should feel bad for making that joke. But we're covering Wrestle Kingdom 11. And I did get to see all of them. In fact, like I said, using my copy, I just finished a couple hours ago rewatching all 5 hours. You know, if we're going to bust WrestleMania for being 5 hours, and I know New Japan has been doing this forever, but damn. If you're trying to watch it all the way through, you can't. But, yeah, so I saw 5 hours. You know, my fascination definitely with New Japan also, I have to talk about this for a second. New Japan is really coming into its own as pretty much the second biggest wrestling company in the world behind WWE. And it's something we'll be talking about throughout this episode. I think a lot of people want it to be on the, feel it should be on the same level. nothing's going to be on the same level as WWE. Really what I see with wrestling is them sort of becoming like what soccer is. Like, there are many different soccer leagues. Like, there's, you know, the English Premier League, which is pretty much considered the best, which NFL, whatever. Whatever analog you want to make, though, soccer really works best here, because whilst the English Premier League is the NFL or NHL or Major League Baseball of soccer, as far as it being really the biggest, most popular league, you know, the other sports don't really have congruence that soccer has, as in the Spanish Premier League, the Italian League, the German League. And what I mean by that is, like, WWE is the English Premier League. It's the most popular, it's the biggest, it's the one you go to make your biggest name, because it has the most eyes on it. I would then think, like, the Spanish Premier League is maybe the second biggest, because of Barcelona and Real Madrid. So that's sort of New Japan. I think maybe, I don't know whether, you know, Ring of Honor would either be the Italians or the Germans. I would say, or maybe, I don't know, what would people consider Major League Soccer? Like, those three, like, and you have a mixture of different wrestling promotions that are sort of like, those three are like battling for that third spot between things like Ring of Honor, British wrestling as a whole, for that matter. I would say PWG, in a way, has probably the Major League Soccer. And you notice I haven't mentioned TNA. TNA is more like, how do I put it? TNA is more like Greek League Soccer. Hey, Tom took another shot at TNA. Take a shot. But, you know, the thing I'm getting at is, you know, there are sort of multiple moments that have really brought forth this internet era. One, I keep mentioning the match that I really feel like, as far as changing WWE to accept more independent wrestlers and independent style in their wrestling, to me was definitely CM Punk versus John Cena back in 2013 on that Raw to determine who would face The Rock at WrestleMania. Because I keep going back to that, like, flipped the switch. And, like, you gradually saw the change over time. But as far as, again, that internet expansion and that expansion where other companies could feel that they could make their presence known with the internet, you really have to go back to Wrestle Kingdom 9. Where, you know, again, you could see New Japan Pro Wrestling. You could see some old matches or stuff like that. On the internet, but because of Global Force Wrestling and Jeff Jarrett partnering with New Japan Pro Wrestling and bringing Wrestle Kingdom 9, let's be honest, a reason a lot of us first heard about these guys was from Wrestle Kingdom 9, which it was an absolutely fantastic card from front to back. I don't know if there was a match in that card that I absolutely hated. Or hated, for that matter. I mean, I think I loved every match that was on that card. I mean, yeah, the second and third sort of six-man tag and eight-man tag matches were typical of what you'd see, and were kind of felt like, you know, we're just getting into it. But, like, every other match, you know, from the first match and then every match on from there felt big and impactful and amazing and everything, and just the entrances and everything. So it's like that gave New Japan Pro Wrestling an avenue, which brings us to today with Wrestle Kingdom 11, and, you know, us having New Japan Pro Wrestling World and the ability to see Wrestle Kingdom 11 and everything like that. So I've rambled enough to let the music end. Ladies and gentlemen, I think it is time to take a look at Wrestle Kingdom 11, which took place on January 4th in Tokyo, Japan, at the Tokyo Dome. Your English color commentators, were Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Wrestle Kingdom 11. By the way, the attendance, which I didn't have on me at the moment of time as we were going in, was 26,192, which I actually find absolutely amazing. I don't know if that's like the limit for the Tokyo Dome, but like the Tokyo Dome looks like this gigantic venue. Like, you sit there looking at it thinking like, oh man, they could probably fit 50,000 in there easy. And they make the setup look like it's like, oh, there has to at least be like 50, 75,000 people. And which I know is like a large gap between numbers, by the way. But for it only be 26,000, like that's like a Monday Night Raw, you know, more recently built basketball stadium or whatever, you know, Quicken Loans or whatever. Or maybe just over that. It's like, I guess it's amazing to sit there and think that, 26,000 people is a small number. But then again, when, you know, this is the WrestleMania for New Japan, you compare that to WrestleMania, which is going into venues to where they're doing 82,000, 90,000, or in the case of, what was it at Texas? I'm sure you can tell me how wrong I was on this number. Like, what, Texas, like, 115,000, 105,000, give or take 10,000. They packed a lot of people in the Texas Stadium once they finally got everybody in, you know, by the time The Rock got there. Wrestle Kingdom 32, you will not be missed. Anyways, but yeah, that's a lot of people. This is the first year using their new theme, Get Ready to Rumble, which you just heard, which, I'm just going to say, they didn't use it like in the final two matches to after the video packages, they played the Wrestle Kingdom theme. Like, but I it's growing on me. I do like getting ready to rumble, but I, like I said, I just prefer the old Wrestle Kingdom Rock theme because it, there are just some things that are just so epic that they can't be duplicated, and that's one of them. So, the very first match, which, if you watch the pre-show, which, again, thanks to my friend, I was able to watch that as well. The pre-show was the usual New Japan Rumble, which is what happens every year. Michael Elgin won in 25 minutes and 13 seconds. The order of participants were Michael Elgin. I can't remember. He's on the tip of my tongue. I felt like it's being blocked out. Whatever. But like Shawn Michaels and some other wrestler did at the Royal Rumble. Going coast to coast from number one. But in this case, it was number one to 14. There's only 14 wrestlers in this. But number one was Michael Elgin. Billy Gunn, Bone Soldier, you know, the worst person in Japan for wrestling, according to some people, just listen to my last episode, Cheeseburger, Jushin Thunder Liger, Kaneki Kobayashi, and number six. Number seven was Tiger Mask. Number eight was Manabu Nakanishi. Number nine was Ryusuke Taguchi. Number 10 was Yoshitatsu. Number 11 was Yuji Nagata. Number 12 was Hiroshi Tenzan. Number 13 was Hiro Saito. And at number 14, Scott Norton. For those again, WCW days. Like I said, Elgin went coast to coast. The last person he eliminated was Cheeseburger. Cheeseburger once again shows up to provide a very entertaining show. Constantly tag teaming with other people because, God damn it, I'm shocked Michael Elgin didn't pick him up and throw him like a lawn dart all the way across the Tokyo Dome. Yeah, it came down to actually Cheeseburger and Michael Elgin. Michael Elgin just finally just picked him up and said, powerbomb, 1, 2, 3. Like, oh my God, you killed Cheeseburger. Can you add some mac sauce to that, please? I'm kind of hungry. It's a New Japan Rumble. What are you gonna say? It's a way to get multiple wrestlers onto the Wrestler Kingdom show. It's in a way any different from the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal or any other Battle Royal that they do at WrestleMania that they've done numerous times. It's the biggest show. You want to get everybody you can onto the show. But our very first match of the evening is a match promoting the recent anime, Tiger Mask Double, which you can find on Crunchyroll. And Lord knows Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino made sure you knew you could find it on Crunchyroll, since they were constantly talking about the anime all through the match. Which, by the way, I'm just going to sit there and say this now. Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino did an absolutely fantastic job the entire evening. They were absolutely wonderful, especially during the last group of matches. Again, we'll get to all that. But just an absolutely fantastic job. One of my favorite sort of funny comedy moments is like, you know, I think Kevin Kelly starts talking about Mrs. X, and it's like, Steve, I think you'd really like Mrs. X. And it's like, why? I'm a married man. Which, by the way, if you've not seen the anime, Mrs. X, the sort of female leader of the Tiger Den, the bad guys in the anime. She's a blonde foreign woman, or let's just say blonde American woman, with, let's just say that I'm pretty sure that she, when she was younger, she got a scholarship to work at Hooters. to steal a Bill Invall line, that was Bill Invall or Jeff Foxworthy. That's the end of it. Tiger Mask W, played by Kota Ibushi, versus Tiger Dark, played by ACH. Which I have to... Please don't take this as being racist, but considering that in the anime, Tiger Dark is a white or light-skinned Japanese person. I'm just saying, I think there were probably a lot of kids very confused. For those who watched the anime. Like, Tiger Mask W isn't dark-skinned. So, that, even mentioning that is probably going to get me a lot of flack. Why the hell did I bring that up? But it's one of those jarring things, like, if you watch the anime. I'm not saying it can't be played by ACH. It was just... funny since I knew who was under the mask. And obviously they knew who was under the mask, and yeah, they didn't shy away from hints from like moves like, hey, that looks very familiar. By the way, Tiger Mask W came out with Suzuko Momori, who voiced the female manager, the young girl, on the anime. If you've seen the anime. Anyways, as there's really no way to segue out of me not getting hate mail. This was an okay match. It was them celebrating the anime. It was okay. I guess the reason I was bringing up who was under the mask is it's very funny because like you see them do moves like, yeah, that's ACH, all right, or that's Kota Ibushi with that springboard moonsault, which by the way Kenny Omega would do later in the evening. And like, hey, that move looks familiar. Maybe, yes, he's like, maybe he was Tiger Mask. I'm like, stop, just stop, Carino. It was funny. The match only went for 6 minutes, 34 seconds. Like, ended with a tiger golden bomb. as it was called. Which I actually like. It was Kota Ibushi's golden star bomb, but instead of coming from the usual power bomb position, it came from the underhook tiger bomb position. So it really actually was a tiger bomb. Just with the whole lift you high up in the air and then hit the sit out part. Next we had the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship as the champions, the Young Bucks, the best tag team in the world, who came out with all of the gold because they came out with the IWGP Junior Heavyweight titles, the Ring of Honor tag titles, the PWG tag titles, and the Superkick champion tag titles. They faced, or should I say, they defended against Roppongi Vice of Beretta and Rocky Romero. This, once again, was a very fun match. I always enjoy the junior heavyweight division, both the tag division and the single division for New Japan. They are fun. They are wonderful. I think it's what everybody hopes the cruiserweight division in WWE will ultimately be. And this is an enjoyable match. I do kind of miss what I've seen the past two Wrestle Kingdoms, which is that they have the sort of four-way match between four teams. Just because it's nonstop action and it's just go, 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 go. And it's just so fun to watch. But there were some great moments in there. The Beretta just eating it on the outside, just doing the big die, the big Topa Hilo, and just splatting on the mat. But they did a great job integrating that as part of the story of Rocky Romero ultimately able to overcome. The Young Bucks were great in talking trash. Just fun to listen to. Just seeing them be complete assholes. To where, you know, there's a spot where, I don't know if it was Nick or Matt. I think it was Matt. He's beating up Beretta. And he goes, hey, Rocky! And he grabs Beretta's arms and he's just, like, holding him. Like, suck it, suck it, suck it, suck it, suck it, suck it. And he's about to do something to Beretta when Rocky comes and, like, knocks him down and goes, hey, suck it, suck it, suck it, suck it. And then Matt super kicks him. And then as Rocky Romero is on the floor, you know, he's sitting there. He jumps over the rope and like, come on, Beretta, tag me in, tag me in. Just being complete little shits. It's fun to watch. Them be absolute assholes. And it leads to, you know, being generally happy when Pudgy Vice wins. Again, I do like the way they ended it to where they're, the Bucks were going for bang for your buck. But as I think it's Matt going for the rolling, forgetting the name of the move, but basically what sets up the sort of 450 splash. Romero counters it into a crucifix pin, and at that time, Beretta, who had just came back from his big missed dive, is able to hold the other Buck's leg and prevent him from getting down to break up the pin, him getting the three count. So your new IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, the Roppongi Vice. And there's an interesting thing that they also brought up during this match was they brought up the rate in which championships are won, as in far as challengers defeating champions and championships changing hands, which is a big thing that would come tonight and would come to play later. We'll bring this back up when we get particularly the final two matches. Our next match is a gauntlet match for the never open weight six-man tag team champions. Chip, the champions, the Irish Prince David Finlay, Ricochet, and Satoshi Kojima faced the Bullet Club the Bullet Club team of Bad Luck Fale, Hangman Page, and Yujiro Takahashi, one of my favorite wrestlers in New Japan. Well, we're going to get to that in a second. The team from Chaos of Jado, Will Ospreay, and Yoshihashi. And the team from Los Ingobernables, De Ha Pong, of Bushi, Evil, and Sonata. Yeah, I've been practicing that. You're still saying it wrong. First off, there's a reason I say Yujiro Takahashi is my favorite wrestler. Or at least one of my favorite wrestlers, because it's time for everybody to come aboard the Tokyo Hoo Train! Because, God damn! God damn. God damn. Ooh, good lord, them girls were fine. Ooh, good lord, them girls were fine. I said this on Facebook. I need to know the name of the girl with the bunny ear mask. I need to know, because I will buy everything she has done. Literally, I had dreams. I'm not going to say what type of dream, but I'm sure y'all can figure it out for yourselves. But I had dreams about her that the night after I first watched it to a stream. I just like envy, like, happy Easter to me. I'll tell you, we did the bunny hop all night long. I just need to ask, are there any pimps up in this house? Woo! Oh, my Lord have mercy. Woo! 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 I need a moment. There's a reason I have water. God damn. I ain't even talking about the match yet. I could give it him. The match was fun. It was a fun Bullet Club. Took care of Chaos. It was them and Chaos who started out first. Will Ospreay had some great little spots there that were fun to watch, doing all his usual stuff. But Bullet Club getting the best of them. Then came out L.I.J. Made short work of Bullet Club. I'm pretty sure they killed the Tokyo Pimp, which made me cry because that meant the girls had to leave. And then came out Finlay, Ricochet, Kojima, and they had a good back and forth, and goddamn if Ricochet isn't the best goddamn wrestler on the planet today, or at least one of them. Like, if I made a list of who I thought was the top wrestlers on the planet, any promotion, Ricochet would be in that top five. Like, to me, he's like up there with AJ Styles. But, so, and I love all the build up to the ending, Kojima coming in, just running roughshod, but again, L.I.J. Teaming up. Bushi spitting in Kojima's face. Evil getting a shot at, or Sonata getting the shot, and then Evil putting the finishing blow. Your new never open weight 6-man tag team champions, Los Ingobernables de Japón. But back to the ladies, because goddamn. My only criticism about it is there wasn't enough. There should have been more. There should have been more. Because let me tell you something. Honestly, one of my things I was looking forward to was Yujiro Takahashi's entrance. Because I wanted to see how hot the girl was. Then he came out with four beautiful women. And the only thing I could say is, why couldn't you not bring more? Tokyo Pimp indeed. God damn. I may need to stop this podcast for a moment. It'll be a moment in your time. It'll be like 2 hours in mine. Because, you know, I go all night long. All night long. All right, I promise. I'll stop telling you how great I am. Because we've only been to the first few matches, and we got like... we got like 8 more to go through. Yeah. So, needless to say, the 6-man championship was fun for what it is. You got new champions in LIJ, but watch it for the girls. Yeah, just watch it for the girls and listening to Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino's commentary, because there's a point where like, Corino's like, oh God, it's just so hot in here. He's like, Kelly, are you taking off your wedding ring? He's like, no, snitch. And there's a point to where, like, as they're doing entrance, by the way, I know it can't go away because it's so hilarious. It's one of my favorite moments in the show. There's a point where Kelly is, in a way, berating Greedo. And then they pan over, it's like, oh, look. Like, Jushin Thunder Liger's here. It's like, and Greedo, like, just, like, goes off, like, of course that dirty old man is here. And I think he stays for the next match. He's like, Houston the Liger's still here. Oh, yeah, he can't get up since the girls left. Oh, God. Oh. Oh, man. Oh, I loved it. I love it. It was so entertaining. Oh, Lord, it was entertaining. Oh. Oh, I need a cigarette. How about you? Our next match was the debut of the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, that is. I refuse to call him Cody. He was Cody Rhodes. So the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, versus the man formerly known as CJ Parker, Juice Robinson. In a special single match debut. It was okay. I think it did a very good job of showcasing Cody Rhodes. As the sort of first view for a lot of people in New Japan. Depending on what happens in the next months, because of rumors, which we'll get into again later. You know, he has the swagger, he has the sway. I could definitely see him being one of the top leaders of Bullet Club, since, you know, he is now part of the Bullet Club. I guess my issue with this match was, if you wanted to know why Juice Robinson never made it out of NXT, I think this match really shows why. And again, he's not a bad wrestler. But seeing how New Japan has used him and whatnot, I kind of feel like he would have just been completely eaten up by the main roster. And it was probably better that he stayed in NXT, whether he knew it or not. And it's just that this match showed, because it's like, It's just some things on it just didn't feel right. I don't know, like, there was some hesitation, I think, on certain moves. They're just not as crisp on a lot of things. Yeah, and a lot of that came from how Robinson was supposed to lead. Again, I'm not saying by any means it's a bad match. I'm not saying that by any means. But, and here comes the but. And no, I'm not talking about the butts from the last match, because goddamn, I can't get over the girls. No, I can't. Thank God I don't have a wedding ring, because I'd be getting a divorce then. No, but it's just, it felt like hesitation. Just something didn't feel right. I'll be honest, I can't put my finger on it. But it just didn't feel right. But, you know, like I said, it was a very okay match. It was a very good debut for Cody. Again, as part of that whole New Japan Pro Wrestling Ring of Honor sort of partnership going on, that leads to the next match, in which Adam Cole, baby, tries to take the Ring of Honor World Championship from Kyle O'Reilly. I actually really enjoyed this match. I really enjoyed the psychology of sort of the early injury that happens to O'Reilly's arm, and that really leads to ultimately his downfall through the match. This was a very short match, actually. You know, as I go down it, like, by the way, I forgot to mention sort of the times here, because I actually have them on my screen, but, like, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Title match was 12 minutes 57 seconds. The gauntlet match for the six-man tag championship was 16 minutes and 6 seconds. Cody's match was just under 10 minutes at 9 minutes 37 seconds. And this match was just a bit over at 10 minutes 14 seconds. So really, for a championship match of the quality of the Ring of Honor World Championship, it was kind of short. But, again, part of the sort of psychology that I really liked was actually how the arm came into play and how it ultimately led to after, I think Adam Cole did like 2 straight of his finishing moves to finally finish off Kyle O'Reilly. It wasn't false finish o'clock, but it was definitely, hitting multiple to make sure that Kyle's going to stay down. So it wasn't as epic as a match as it could have been. If it was on a Ring of Honor pay-per-view, it definitely, I could have saw this going like 20 minutes plus. But on this card, being mid-card, being in the middle of it, and really sort of what it represented. This was sort of the 6th match on the card if you include the match Rumble. And mind you, this is, if you include the Rumble, there are 11 matches. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so this is sort of the first 5. And this sort of encapsulated these really what are opening matches. Because the thing about Wrestle Kingdom 11 is there are sort of 2 areas. There are the first 5 and the pre-match, or essentially the pre-show match, which is the Rumble. Which are really, it feels like they were just matches. They're good, but they were all about just getting people into the card. And they were all about building anticipation for the final 5 matches, which were the main events. And because of that, like, some of these matches kind of, I felt like, hindered from the audience not being into them. Except for the one that I had people into it was, again, the 6-man championship. And not that they weren't showing respect for the other matches or they weren't cheering, but they weren't, it just didn't feel like people were into these matches as they would be into the next 5 matches. And there was definitely a different vibe. It's like, when the next match, which we're going to get to, and trust me, we're going to get to. When we got to that match, it's like, the crowd all of a sudden started to wake up, and with every match, they built and built and built until they tapered off for the final match, which, again, we're going to get to all of that, because I kind of have a controversial view on that final match, which is I'm probably going to have people chasing me with pitchforks and torches about. But we'll get to that. So, like I said, the Ring of Honor World Championship really sort of was a good sort of ending point for that. Those first five sort of build-up matches. And then we sort of go into our next five matches, which are the main events, because they're sort of the big titles. Our first one is the three-way tag team match for the IWGP Tag Team Championships, as the champions, the Gorillas of Destiny, a.k.a. Tama Tonga and Tonga Roa, face off against Chaos, the team from Chaos, that is Tomohiro Ishii, one of my favorites, the Stone Pit Bull, and his tag partner Toru Yano, and the GBH Great Bash Heels of Toga Makabe and Tomaki Honma. And god damn this match. This is one of the most entertaining matches of the night for me. I loved this match. It was like a three-way sort of tornado tag in a way, but it wasn't. And whew. I just, big guys just laying into each other. Sometimes that's all you need, and it's fun, and it's just, with Hanma and his motions, and just like, and like, he hits his head too much, that's why. And, and, you know, Makabe just being a beast, the Gorillas of Destiny just laying into everybody, Ishii, because, who does Ishii hit hard? Like, you feel everything when Ishii hits somebody. And they're like, I felt it. And then Yano just being the thief himself and being sneaky. There's a moment to where he gets tagged in. He goes to hit a guy, and the guy hits him, and he immediately tags one of the Gorilla's Destinies and goes out. Another thing with Yano was, the story going into this is that Ishii and Yano got into this by sort of interjecting themselves into the conflict between the GBH and the Gorillas of Destiny. And as part of this, the past couple weeks, Yano not only stole the IWGP Tag Championships during an event, but also during a press conference the day before, he stole the World Tag League trophies from Makabe and Hanma. So, when the Gorillas of Destiny come out, which, again, they just came out really, you know, Tonga, which, by the way, Tonga is a really underappreciated wrestler. Like, I grew an appreciation for what he does as a wrestler, his sort of defensive style. I really love that. There was something to where, you know, they sneak around the ring and they jump Yano while the GBH attacks Ishii and knocks him down, and then Bullet Club throws Yano in the ring, and then you have GBH and Gorillas of Destiny just teeing off all four of them on Yano, putting the licks in for, like, stealing their possessions. And then they realize, holy shit, our opponents across the ring, and they start fighting each other. But with all of that being said, the shining moment of this match, or should I say moments, because there was like 243 of them, according to like Steve Corino, was the talking during the match, in particular, the absolute cussing from both Togi Makabe and Tonga Roa, who, by the way, you might remember from WWE. I believe he was Kamachi in the WWE, the guy who wrote with the man who's now known as Sin Cara. He would ride the bike down. I can't repeat, because I am trying to now keep the show a bit more PG and everything. So I can't repeat exactly what was said, because I don't want to spoil it for you. Which, by the way, I love when anything non-PG happened. They were a lot, Kenny Kelly and Steve Corino were like, what about the kids? Like, when Yuji Takahashi came out with the Ho Train, And by the way, that is what I'm calling it, because that is exactly what it was. It was a hoe train. Let's not try to kid ourselves any which way. What the hell it was. It was like, when he comes in, I was like, kid, parents, you should put your children away at least for this entrance. And then this is like, I believe the line was from Kelly Kelly, like, saying, like, I think Steve Rudin said, like, he's like a sailor. And Kelly Kelly was like, you know, kids must wake up watching this as they're waking up on the East Coast. You know, mom and dad bought them Wrestle Kingdom, and they're getting an earful. And it's like, it just got like, oh my God. Steve Carino literally said, stop, I can't take it anymore. He literally said on the air, is there a way to turn off my mic? Because it's like, he could not stop laughing. This isn't like they were hearing like subtle things that other people, like literally they were yelling out curse word. And when I say yelling out curse word, I mean it was strings of curse words. Like, if you remember the Bernie Mac bit about people using the word MF, and you know, mother effer, every other sentence, it was like that. Like, curse word into another curse word into another curse. It's like, oh my. And it made this match so entertaining. Like, this match was entertaining even without it, with just these three teams laying into each other. But the cursing put it over the top. Like, oh, God. I'm sure there'll be a tag match that will top it this year, but there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that is going to top how entertaining this match was as far as being a tag match. And mind you, again, we get new champions again, because the ending comes with them with just a string of big boobs. Yano tagging himself in without the Girls of Destiny seeing it. Doing something with the stun down, and then EC hits with two clotheslines that Yano follows up. So, like, when he hits the clothesline, I believe it's Roa, gets rolled up into a small package, and your new IWGP Tag Team Champions, Tomohiro Ishii and Toru Yano from Chaos. And by the way, if I didn't mention, like I said, the last match, yes, Adam Cole beat Kyle O'Reilly to become the new ROH World Champion. So far, every title has changed hands. This will be a theme as we continue, because our next match is for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. As the man formerly known as Komachi, the man I said was the worst wrestler on the independent scene, at least from what I got to saw, but formerly known that, now known as, going by his former name and real name of Hiromu Takahashi, the ticking time bomb, versus the ace of the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Division, Kushida, the current champion. This was a really good match. Real back and forth, great fast-paced action. Kushida is just so smooth, and I love his style. I love his sort of striking, submissive style. I would love to see it in the WWE. I think it would do great in the Cruiserweight division. And that hoverboard lock, which is a... it's a Kimura lock, basically. And the way he cinches that in, like, and just, like, wrap his legs around a person and just hold that, it just makes it look so much more vicious and real, and just like, oh, yeah, it feels good. But the back of the spots, like, and there were some botches. The big particular one was, there seemed like there was supposed to be a hurricane run where, like, Kushida's inside the ring And Takahashi is going to jump from the top turnbuckle, catch him, and is going to try to hurricane run him out of the ring over the top rope. But he lands just to basically Takahashi's back lands on the rope and sort of stumbles back in, and it looked really bad. It was a really bad botch, but they recovered from that in a really good way, and they continued with the match. They did a really good job really selling, like, their big spots and hurting. There was a particular one, I can't really remember off the top of my head what happened, but, like, Kushida landed really, really hard, and, like, again, great job by Carino and Kelly of talking about, you know, again, the referee can stop this match, which is another thing in New Japan that's, in a way, is different. Like, they'll stop a match in WWE, but I don't know if they would have the title change hands or whatever. But, like, they regularly do have, like, the match is stopped because of injury and the title changes hands. Like, you know, basically win by knockout. Which used to be a thing, but they really have that. And so, just great back and forth skill. The near falls leading up to the finish were really good. Really put up the anticipation about who's going to pull this out. Because again, up to this point, like, every title has changed hands. Like, okay, but Kushida's not going to lose against Takahashi here, you know. They're taking time, but with, again, great entrance with the this, like, 60-pound giant volleyball falling from the ceiling. And but by the way, Carino's like, you know, maybe New Japan should really think about next time having 60-pound volleyballs falling from the ceiling. Because I think it almost broke their set. But, yeah, the whole lead-up. And then there was, oh, God, I'm blanking. I think it was a move off the turnbuckle, a counter by Takahashi, that allowed him to set up Kushida into his finisher, which is a spinning Emerald Fusion, and picks up the 1-2-3, and your new IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, Hiromu Takahashi. So that sets up our very next match. And mind you, this is building. Like, the tag match was great, and then the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champ built upon that, and that goes right into our next match for the Never Open Weight Championship as Katsuyori Shibata, the champion, defends against his longtime nemesis slash friend slash enemy slash childhood friend, Hiroki Goto from Chaos. I love this match. Let me say this. I love the Never Open Weight Championship, and this year, it was put in a way that was, I think, is so much better than the way JR and Matt Stryker put it. When I watched Wrestle Kingdom 9 2 years ago, they described the Never Open Weight Champion as sort of their extreme title, in a way. Like, they couldn't figure out a way to put it. But it was, like, it was their extreme title. And when you look at, like, who the first champion was, which was, oh, God, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name, but, he fought Mike Awesome in ECW, and, you know, I apologize for being, Masato Tanaka. I had to think about it for a moment. And, you know, that, he brought sort of an extreme style to it. And other wrestlers did, too, but as, that's what it started out to, but as it moved on to other, like, Makabe, and to Ishii, and to Shibata, it sort of transformed from that extreme style to being what it is now, to which I believe Steve Corino and Kelly Kelly said, the Never Open Weight Championship has come to represent the old strong style, where it's just about never giving up. How much pain can you last? And that's really what the championship has come to be, like, just absolutely laying into each other. And oh my God. God, did Goto and Shibata lay into each other. Like, God damn. Oh. You know how I was talking about, you know, Ishii and how, like, you could feel everything he did? Yeah, you got the same thing here. Like, god damn, I felt everything Goto and Shibata did to each other. And there was this sort of great story going on also within the match they were telling of Goto, you know, not being able to win the big one. And, like, can he finally win the big one? Like, he's won big ones, but also not won big ones. Like, he defeated Naito last year, but it was really downhill from that. And he thought about retiring until he was given an invitation to Chaos. And he sort of come up, and it's like, but can he win the big one? Can he win the championship? Can he beat, like, he's won tag, but like, can he win singles? Which, sort of the bad part about it is, like, it does feel like this is sort of a constant storyline with Goto. Like, they do this, like, I remember them doing this and talking about this, about can he win the big one with the tag titles, which, it's funny, because, like, even before that, he had won the tag titles with Carl Anderson as part of a tag team called Sword and Guns, and then Carl betrayed him, and now he's come back with Shibata, and he won it with Shibata. He can win big ones. And I think he's won a majority of the time, like, he's at Wrestle Kingdom. But just, like, that storyline, like, you know, where is his career going to go? Is his career on a downturn or is it an upturn? This match would really decide it. And just, like, that might be, like, it was literally that thing of, like, is that your best shot? Is that your best shot? That your best shot? That's not your best shot. Give me your best shot. And there's a sequence to where, like, they're doing suplex throws, and, like, they literally land, roll, come up, do a suplex to them. They literally get back up, hit them with a clothesline, and they get back, and just, like, till they're laid out flat in the ring, and it's just like, oh, you feel it, and it's beautiful. Like, you could feel everything. And then the whole build up to the climax, like, the match started with Shibata firmly in control, but as the match went on, Goto gained little control, little by little by little, and that story of him gaining that control throughout the match till you get to the climax in the end to where he now has control and Shibata's starting to waver, and it's like, it's all about Goto just delivering that final blow and that sequence of moves to where I'd have to look up his move list, so I apologize to where, but basically the sort of suplex into a side slam, picks him up, brings him down to where a front face lock into the knee, brings him back up, goes into the reverse DDT position, which I believe is the GR knee, the GRN, or I apologize for blanking on what they called it, but his finisher where it's at sort of, where he then does sort of the twisted sort of sling blade motion into his knee, and the head whiplashes off his knee. That being the finish, and him being able to put away Shibata. Well-earned title. I love that sequence of events. I thought it was a great build-up to the finish. So your new, never open-weight champion, Hiroki Goto, and at this point, every title has changed hands, and here's my second criticism of Wrestle Kingdom 11. That they had, that leading into the IWGP Intercontinental and Heavyweight Championships, they had every title change hands. Now, mind you, they could have shocked me and had these titles change, which I know is sort of given away. I mean, by now you know who won and who lost, but going into this, it kind of felt like you knew that these titles then weren't going to change hands, which kind of took a bit of the suspense out of the matches. Like, it was like, sitting there like, okay, so they've had every title change hands. They're not going to have the final two big ones then change hands. Like, if there had been a couple of retains, like, some had changed, some had retained. It would have been one of those things that, like, oh, man, people are losing titles, but they're also retaining. Who's going to win? Who's going to lose? Like, literally, at this point, everybody who had lost their title, it was one of those things to where, like, I maybe would have kept the title on Kushida. I would have kept the never open weight title on Ricochet, Finley, and Kojima. Maybe have the Young Bucks win. But like at the point, it felt like it was a big night for chaos and for Los Ingobernables de Japón. So it's like also that, like them winning all the titles at this point, it's like also sort of like, oh man, so what, are they going to take the titles off them? They don't feel like, you felt like they were sort of like celebrating both chaos and LIJ. So it's like, it took a bit of the suspense away from really what they were building up to. But that being said, our next match is for the IWGP Intercontinental Champion in what is my match of the night. Yep, there I said it. It's my, it's not the final match. It's this match. Tetsuya Naito versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. Again, put down your weapons and wait till the end of this review before you roast me. Jesus. Hear me out. Let me start with this match. Like I said, the champion, Tetsuya Naito, defending against Hiroshi Tanahashi. Even though I had some of the suspense, because I felt like, okay, they're not going to change these titles now. My God, what a wonderful match. Just the absolute psychology in this match was beautiful. And God bless Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino for their call, because they really pointed it out. And it's like, it just made it beautiful. You had the Ace of Japan, the long-standing face of New Japan Pro Wrestling, against this hot, up-and-coming Naito, who has revived his career under LIJ, and is this absolute fan favorite. And you have these two fan favorites going against each other. Both were absolutely smooth in the ring. Just great back and forth, but the psychology involving the knees, which is beautiful. Because you had Naito going after Tanahashi's knees. But then you had Tanahashi going after Naito's knees. But he wasn't going after his right knee. You know, Naito had came in with his right knee taped up. But he kept going after the left knee. And like there were some, like one where I think Naito countered into a suplex, sort of German suplex with a bridge. But it was his right knee that buckled, not the left knee that Tanahashi had been working on. And mind you, Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino pointed that out right away. And it's that storytelling of the psychology. Like, all of these matches had stories going in about, like, that are mostly like, can he win the big one? Or them going down this journey. You saw this, we'd see the same thing in this match. You know, Tanahashi, he's had this long string of defeats. Can he win? Or, you know, is there much left for him? Can Naito keep his hot streak going? You know, you see the same thing with Kenny Omega, you know, and Okada, like, both wanting basically, we both believe we should be the face of New Japan going forward as it tries to be global. So, like, there are those stories going in, but of all of the matches, none had a better in-ring story, like the in-match story, which is completely different from the sort of outside stories that every match necessarily has. Like, when you describe a match, how did a wrestler win? As well, when it involves great psychology, like, well, there was this leg or there was this body part that got injured and he worked on that body part, and ultimately it's the reason why he can't hit a certain finishing move or whatever and leads to his downfall. That's like psychology 101 as far as wrestling. And, or just put it a better way, it's wrestling psychology 101. And that is what you saw here. You saw wrestling psychology 101 taken to its nth degree, because they were both working on each other's knees. But with Tanahashi, he was working on the wrong knee. And that's what cost him the championship. Because it does come into play to where he has him set up, and he goes for the splash, but Naito gets both knees up. And now he first clutches his right and then his left, because both are, you know, which all that then leads to a Destino from the top rope, and when that does, when Tanahashi barely kicks out because he's just been like worn down the entire thing. He then hits another Destino and picks up the 1-2-3, and all of that because Tanahashi worked on the wrong knee. Just this, like, that story of like them working on each other's knee, but Tanahashi working on the wrong knee, and that's what led to his downfall. That psychology. You add that to a wonderfully smooth wrestling match. I mean, Naito and Tanahashi were just smooth as silk with their maneuvers. I can't recall a botch at all in the match. And just the showmanship, you know. Early on, you know, you have Naito, you know, he sends Tanahashi out, and it looks like he's going for, you know, the suicide dive. Tanahashi goes out of the way, but instead, of course, Naito, you know, just rolls into the ropes, rolls, or doesn't do the dive, brings her off the rope, and just, like, rolls into that lane, like, yeah, mother effa. And just, like, points to the sky, and, like, raises his eyes, like, just showing off and just like, dude, just being an absolute smooth criminal. And that, again, storytelling element to where there's a point to where Tanahashi, a little bit later, hits a sling blade on the ring apron. Like, they're outside the ropes and he hits the sling blades very hard and they're trying to get up and the count's going. And as Naito looks up, there's Tanahashi, and he's just, like, in the same laid position, like, just waving at Naito, and it's just like, oh, I love Tanahashi, there's a reason he's my favorite wrestler! And yes, as much as I make the jokes about Yujiro Takahashi, Tanahashi is actually my favorite wrestler. Like, if I listed my favorite wrestlers, it would be Hiroshi Tanahashi number one, Tomohiro Ishii number two, Goto number three, a close number three, Makabe number four, I don't even consider Ricochet, like, through Japan, like, because he's such a freelancer. I guess that's just off the top of head for, and a lot of that is like the hard hitting. And Kushida would probably be number five, by the way. But just smooth as silk with all their maneuvers. The match just, which went 25 minutes and 25 seconds. By the way, because I forgot, I apologize. The tag team championship match was 12 minutes, 24 seconds. Junior Heavyweight Championship was 16 minutes, 15 seconds. The NEVER Openweight Championship was only 2 seconds longer at 16 minutes and 17 seconds. So, like, obviously, you know, and again, this is sort of the difference between sort of the first matches in the card, which were a bit shorter with the exception of NEVER Openweight, but again, that was, like, several matches pushed into one. These are obviously much longer. But just, oh my god, the wrestling, the smoothness of the maneuvers, and like I said, in particular, the wrestling psychology in this match is just absolutely spectacular. And that was something that, in all honesty, I didn't see in the next match. Let me do this proper. Our last and final match is for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. It went 46 minutes and 45 seconds. It was the longest match of the night, obviously, as the champion, Kazuchika Okada, faced off against the Bullet Club's Kenny Omega, who had Matt and Nick Jackson with him. I'm not saying that this match is bad, because I sort of hinted that I didn't like this match. I actually do like this match. I really did enjoy this match. My issue isn't that I didn't enjoy this match, that I don't think this is a 5-star match, because I do think this is a 5-star match. I think from the IWGP Tag Team Championship to the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, those final five matches, all 5-star. far as I'm concerned, all I mean, mind you, the tag match, just because of the cursing, makes it a 5-star match. But every one of them were just top-notch. That's not my issue. My issue is that I'm hearing everyone like, oh, it's a 6-star match. And everything. And I'm listening to this, and with all due respect, you know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing that basically because Kenny Omega went on Sports Illustrated, or went in Sports Illustrated, and spoke out against the WWE, he's now the independent wrestling community's poster child. And it's like, he could do no wrong, and everything he does is perfect. And it's amazing. And it's just, are we watching the same match? Like, again, it's not bad. Especially the final third of this match, which we'll get to. Everything leading up to the end was spectacular. Because I look at this match in three stages. There was the first part, which is sort of the beginning, the feeling out, which was really good, which I think went up to Okada taking out the table. Then you had the second part that was started from Okada taking out the table, leading up to, I would say, leading up to Omega going through the table. And then you had the third part, which was the build and build and build and all the... And it was false finish o'clock, motherfucker. As they built towards the end. Now, like I said, the first part, I love it. I love the feeling out. Again, just the sort of smoothness of both Okada and Omega. Just sort of little one-upmanship right there. By the way, the entrances, before I forget. Enjoyable entrances. Okada, you know, with the money, looks like the same one he does every year. I did like Kenny Omega's Terminator entrance. I did. I just call bullshit on it. As I think it was Matty J, actually, who said it was better than Triple H's. Like, okay, Triple H actually had Terminators with him. Okay, I get it. You love Kenny Omega. There's nothing wrong with loving Kenny Omega. And his entrance was awesome. It was not better than Triple H's. Wow. My God. I can hear the sucking from here. Okay? Excuse me. Not sucking. I can hear the blowing from here. Okay? You knew what I meant. It's like, Jesus Christ. Get off him. He needs to wrestle. But, I did. But, like, certainly Kenny Omega didn't see a role that he wasn't willing to break. And Okada is willing to, you know, as, you know, Gato sort of coaches him to, as long as he follows a certain game plan, he's willing to break the rules himself. So, and sort of the one-upmanship there. But then you had the table came out, because it was a reference to the couple times that, or at least the one particular time that Omega had put Okada through the table, and he wanted payback. And that's when you had sort of this bogging down that was the sort of middle part of this match that, you know, you had the table on the outside. And mind you, there were big spots. I think there was sort of the big, there's a part where Okada gets sent to the outside. Omega sort of gets down like the Terminator. And you have the Young Bucks leading the crowd and the... And then he does big Topa Hilo. That was a spot. You had the at another point. Okada gets sent to the outside. And basically Kenny Omega does Kota Ibushi's triangle moonsault over the railing. Like, they literally started... Which, by the way, a funny thing, funny comment from Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino, because they land where the New Japan Pro Wrestling commentators are. And so they start pushing back the table like, you have a, hey Steve, do you have any, advice for them? And it's like, get the hell out of there! That was really funny. And then he does the triple moonsault, which is really, really cool looking spot. And that's the thing. There were some cool looking spots in there, but it just, it felt bogged down. Like, getting to those, all those individual spots, it felt like they took too much time. And that's ultimately the thing that I feel that brings a downfall to this match. It's still a really good 5-star match. I really do enjoy it. And I'm somebody who loves long matches. But it just... And mind you, that shows you how great the indie part, because it's still a 5-star match because of that. But it's just like... That middle part just felt bogged down. And it's like... All of, I can't say they could have cut it all out, but like literally, like they, it felt like they spent 20 minutes on stuff that could have been done in 10 minutes. Like it just felt like they wasted a lot of time. And yeah, so it's my one criticism of the match, because then after the table and they finally get that whole table spot away, which. Thank God Kenny Omega's okay. I mean, he doesn't look okay after that, but it's like, thank God he's still alive. I mean, if you listen to Dave Meltzer talk about the spot, like, talk about how dangerous that, because it was, like, similar to a Rick Rude spot, and now, like, Kenny Omega could have been impaled. It's like, you look at those New Japan tables, it's like, yeah, I think they should get some new tables. Ones that actually break the right way. Because that table didn't look like it really broke. It certainly exploded, but it didn't look like it broke. And please, Kenny Omega, don't kill yourself. But speaking of killing themselves, because... Then you had the third part of the match, in which then it picked up, and it was false finish o'clock. It was them laying each other, the counter, into a counter, into a counter, into a big move, and then one, two, oh my God, a kick out. And it's just building and building, and like, that's when I got into the match. It's like, and my evidence here is, when you look at the Naito Tanahashi match also, from start to finish, the crowd was into that match. Here, I understand the Japanese crowds can be silent, but there's a difference between them being silent out of respect and, like, every time a spot is, like, big cheer and a clap, to, like, just, like, they're not really being silent, they're just, they're, like, sort of not into the match. And, like, that middle part, it just felt like the crowd wasn't into the match. Whether... And that can be, I think, eliminated because in the four matches leading up to it, they were into every match. And it's like, you definitely felt like the crowd was tired and it took them a while to get back into the match. But after that table spot, that's when the crowd sort of got back into it. And at the right time, because, again, the counter, and just... The build into from counters and big spots into Okada hitting both his third and fourth Rainmaker clotheslines. Kenny Omega never being able to hit the One-Winged Angel. But after that fourth Rainmaker clothesline, 1, 2, 3, Okada... Still your IWGP Heavyweight Champion. And like I said, this match was kind of cool because you kind of felt like, okay, I know now that Naito and Okada are going to retain. So I knew that was going to happen. Actually, I knew because I read the spoilers before I even got to see this. That's besides the point. I had to move my seat because my pad was slipping off my seat. It was a great match. I'm not saying it wasn't a great match. All 5 of the last 5 matches on the card are 5-star matches. All of them were great and wonderful, and you should watch all of them again. I guess the reason I sort of, if this happens from time to time, because I go to see something, I really like it, and I think it's okay, but then I hear people for what is very obvious political, and by political I don't mean actual politics, but sort of the politics within a particular fandom, just over-loving something because of something. And like I said, in this case, I feel that because Kenny Omega has become sort of the new love child of internet wrestling fans, because of what he said in Sports Illustrated, because he's willing to speak out against the big bad WWE, which apparently now is destroying and trying to destroy all these small promotions, even though they're not, and are trying to take over the wrestling world, even though they're not. And yet they still won't boo Triple H, who's the real perpetrator behind all of this, mind you. But they won't boo him, but this is something to bitch about another day. It's just, I really did like the match. I just don't think it was the best match on the card. It's certainly a match of the year candidate, but it's not the best match of the card. We had several match of the year candidates here. So I think, you know, like I said, I'm going around in circles here, but I really enjoyed the match. It was a great match, just not the match that everybody says it is. But still, I would suggest watching it. Time to wrap this up. Top three moments. I have to think about that for a second. I know what number one is. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely know what number one is. We'll get to that in a second. And I know what number two is. It's about trying to figure out... I know what number three is. You know, something we sort of forgot to... And you know what? God damn it, I forgot to talk about it in a IWGP Intercontinental match. See, and I'm sure... You know... This is why I'm frustrated, because I feel like this match doesn't get enough... Not only was it silky smooth in the maneuvers and just great wrestling from two absolute great wrestlers with just absolutely wonderful psychology. Let us not forget, Tetsuya Naito... Okay, let me get to it in a second, because it has to be number two. Number three, the swearing in the tag match. That's number three, top three moment of Wrestle Kingdom 1. The swearing, absolutely hilarious. But number two, Tetsuya Naito finally won at Wrestle Kingdom. What? And by the way, Kevin Kelly and Steve Corrido like just exploded with joy when it happened because of that. How can we forget, like... You want to talk about something that's at stake. Tetsuya Naito has never been able to win at Wrestle Kingdom. He finally gets his Wrestle Kingdom victory, and it's against the ace of all of New Japan. Like, this is like AJ Styles defeating John Cena at SummerSlam level. And yet, and even I forgot, like... I didn't forget about it. I knew it. I just forgot to bring it up during the match. But, like, that's a big thing. Naito finally winning at Wrestle Kingdom. And it... No one barely ever talked about it on the internet. Or I may have missed it. If I did, I'm sorry. But it's like, from what I saw, all anybody wants to do is talk about Okada and Omega. And no one wants to talk about that. Naito finally won a match at Wrestle Goddamn Kingdom. Oh. Damn. Whew. But yes, that is definitely moment number two. Naito finally getting that Wrestle Kingdom victory. And honestly, it should be number one. And if I would have probably thought it through, I probably would have had it tied for number one and would have put something else at number three. My number one, as I have it, is Well, say it with me now, because it's time for everybody to come aboard the Tokyo Hoot Train! Because, as I said before, I need to know who that woman is, my kingdom for her name, my kingdom for her name, because God damn. I found you, Miss New Booty. Okay, I'm gonna have some very informative moments later on tonight. By the way, you can tell I'm really into this pay-per-view because I've just been non-stop talking for the past hour. My top three matches, and I want to express this is based on what I enjoyed the most. Everybody's going to be different, okay? So my top three matches are the tag match for the the three-way tag match for the IWGP heavyweight tag team titles. Absolutely hard-hitting, loved it, but the swearing put it over the top. Like, you want to talk about an entertaining match just because of that. Number two, the never open weight championship between Shibata and Goto. Speaking of hard-hitting, and just build up for, again, one of my favorite wrestlers in Goto, him winning the title, and just the build up to him winning a big match, and just like that, and the shots, and just like, ooh, you felt everything in that match. But my number one match, I think it's no surprise by how I just went on and on about it, the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, Tetsuya Naito versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. For all the reasons I put it, Naito finally winning at Wrestle Kingdom. The silky smoothness of the match. And like I said, that wrestling psychology, which I hope wrestling schools take that match and air that over and over again. At least one example of like how you do wrestling psychology. And that's really frustrating because I don't think people are giving that match enough credit for the psychology in that match. It's like, it's very frustrating. So those are my top three matches of Wrestle Kingdom 11. Overall, I enjoyed Wrestle Kingdom 11. I really did. It was a really great pay-per-view. Great way to start off the new year. The first five matches, six if you include the sort of pre-show rumble, are hit and miss. Depends on what's your cup of tea. Kind of gets slow with the final two matches. But the final five just are this build, do what Wrestle Kingdom is supposed to do, which is a build and a build. Each one builds off of each other and just kept the crowd going. The crowd was exhausted a little bit at the first part of the heavyweight, the final match, but came back alive for that finish. Five-star matches in a row. You can't ask for more. Mind you, like I said, I do have those criticisms. Because of the crowd going out or whatever, again, sort of the slowness of that second part of the heavyweight title match. Again, the first part being not, like, again, I'm comparing a lot of this to Wrestle Kingdom 9. And I still think Wrestle Kingdom 9, front to back, had a better card. Because, again, that front card before the heavyweight title matches were, I think, infinitely better than the front card here. But this is still a good pay-per-view. I do suggest watching it. I personally suggest you maybe watch it in parts. Like, watch the first if you're going to watch the pre-show, watch the first six. Without the pre-show, watch the first five. And then watch the next five later. Or just watch the final five. And again, you'll have a good time, good entertaining time watching wrestling. But overall, a really good show at Wrestle Kingdom 11. A really good foot forward for New Japan in trying to expand globally. So I give Wrestle Kingdom 11 a 4.5 out of 5. Really, really solid pay-per-view. Just some slight things holding it back from being perfect, but still, really great pay-per-view from New Japan Pro Wrestling. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. As I take a breath, because I feel like I've been talking nonstop for an hour. So, yeah, I feel exhausted now, and I still have to go out and do stuff. I hope you enjoyed it. Next time out, I'm definitely going to be reviewing a Royal Rumble. In fact, I know what Royal Rumble I'm going to review next time out. Next time out, I'm going to be reviewing a Rumble that featured a man of gold. A man of razors. And a Royal Rumble that set up one of the greatest WrestleMania main events of all time. I'm, of course, talking about Royal Rumble 1996. So, that's the next review. Remember to check out the Absolution Network and all our other podcasts from both myself and Shintanger Curl and John Ramos. Remember to check our friends on the sidebar, all at the site at www.an.132productions.com. The Absolution Network, your place for the Toonami generation. So, that is it for me. And I just want to remind you that I am the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and you can't teach that. Why? Because I'm CM Jew. Recognize.
Every day I play to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, nobody without too negative a deep. But I believe, yes, I believe. I said I believe. I stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mindset. What's the feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. And reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know.